Are you ready?
Welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
Hey, looks like the Canadians are here.
Call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday.
This is
First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
This is a case about three children who died a violent and horrific death at the hands of the person who shoved them the most. But also speaking in the world that we live today, and all too often, criminals are being treated as victims, and the real victims are invisible. It is our job to make sure that the victims are not invisible, to make sure that they're not forgotten, and to make sure that we stand for them in the way that we seek justice. And that's what I think we've done in this case.
That is Timothy Cruz, and he's the prosecutor in the case that ended in a mistrial today involving Lindsay Clancy, a woman that nobody disputes took the lives of her three children. The only question then was, would she be held responsible for taking the lives of her three young children by strangling them to death? Each one of those strangulations took about 3 minutes, according to the testimony at trial. But the whole trial ended in a mistrial today, and I want to give you the details of that. But I wanted you to hear first from Timothy Cruz, the man who tried this case and who's going to have to try it again. They're going to make a decision about whether or not to bring charges against Lindsay Clancy again. It was also one of the most bizarre things I've ever seen in my time as a reporter, where there were hundreds, even thousands of women who would dress up in pink, who'd go on social media, and who would defend the actions of this murderous mom, which I think was absolutely dead wrong. And there are people defending her even today. Let me get into the details of that in a moment. First, welcome to First Amendment Friday. It's a pleasure to have you with me. And on First Amendment Fridays, we open up the phone lines and every subject is fair game. At 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. If you're a naysayer, naysayers always go to the head of the line. You're going to send me an email at talk@LarsLarson.com. I read all of them. I try to respond to most of them. And then you can vote in our X poll. The poll on X today found at Lars Larson Show on X. Should a parent have the right to take their own child to the church of their choice? I would say yes to that. I'll give you the details of it a bit later. But you can find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Now, let me go back to Massachusetts, where this case involving Lindsay Clancy and the deaths of her three children ended in a mistrial today. And I thought the DA in this case, Timothy Cruz, who only spoke a short time ago, but he said, too often today, you see criminals portrayed as the victims.
You know, speaking generally, we live in a great country. And we have the best criminal justice system in the world, if you ask me. And that's what you start today. You start over the course of the last few weeks. Prosecutors and defense, dealing in court, and ultimately having individuals make their determinations, jurors making their determinations. And the defendants that are charged with crimes in our country have an awful lot of rights.
Yes, they do. But the problem is that sometimes the folks who are covering the case remember everything about the person accused of the crime and not so much about the people who were the victims of the crime. And Timothy Cruz, the DA in this case, decided to take special attention or give special attention to the names of the three young children who were murdered in this case. It is not the Lindsay Clancy case. It is the case involving the deaths of those three human beings. The mom is still alive, and she's probably going to have to be tried again. I would expect that the DA will bring charges, although the DA made it clear today they're not going to make a firm decision today about whether or not to bring those charges again and to retry this case. But this is the way that these weeks and weeks of trial and then the last week of deliberation by the jury, this is the way it came to an end this morning.
In the matter of Commonwealth versus Lindsay Clancy, the court declares a mistrial. All prior bail orders remain in full force and effect. This matter is continued to September 29th, 2026 at 9 a.m. for status, trial assignment, and the Rule 25 motion in Plymouth.
Now, that's what's going to happen. It's going to be September before we hear, or later September, when they have the next hearing. But then the DA is going to have to make a decision. And how did it come to this? What we're able to determine, normally, unless a trial ends with a verdict of one kind or another, you don't get to talk to the jurors until after the trial is over. And even then, it's up to the individual jurors whether they want to talk to reporters or anybody else about what they did. They are free to stay silent if they want. But these jurors were very, very frustrated. It seems that this week they kept telling the judge, we can't get to a decision. And by yesterday, we knew that there were 11 of the jurors who said they had already made a decision. And what it seems possible to intuit is that those 11 wanted to declare that Lindsey Clancy was not guilty of the crime she'd been accused of, the murder of her children. But there was one holdout who insisted that he would not say that she was not guilty. And they went to the judge and they complained to the judge, Your Honor, this juror is not following your instructions on reasonable doubt. Well, it sounds like he was. He apparently took his jury duty seriously. By all accounts, maybe we'll find out different, but it seems that juror said, I'm not convinced that she's not guilty. I'm not going to vote for not guilty. He apparently wanted to find her guilty, but the other 11 did not. So the judge did what all judges should do, which is say thank you to the jury today.
And I just kind of wanted to let you know, I understood how hard everybody worked in this case. I understood that you all gave everything you could, and probably more than you thought you could. And so on behalf of myself, I just want to thank you so much that you should be proud for what you did. You braced for that duty. You performed that duty. And I just kind of wanted to thank you on behalf of myself and behalf of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely appropriate for a judge to thank the jury. I know that having talked to people who've served on juries, I've never had the opportunity to serve on a jury. I would like to have the opportunity to serve on a jury. Let me make it clear. I would never work to get out of jury duty. And the one time in my entire life that I was called for jury duty, I was already scheduled to be, well, on assignment working for the TV station I worked for at the time, and I was going to be out of the country. It wasn't possible. And I said, can I take my jury duty at another time? They said, you'll have to wait until you're called again. But let me go back to the DA for a moment, because the DA is unequivocal about who actually did this crime. Take a listen.
The facts are Lindsey Clancy killed her three children, and the evidence suggested to us that she was in control of her actions when she committed those homicides. Our court system is built to weigh our views with those of defense counsel and bear out whether a defendant is guilty or not guilty. We did our part, and I'm proud of the part of the work that we did in this prosecution.
Yeah, and he also wanted to remind people these children were the victims, not Lindsey Clancy.
This has been an emotional trial for everybody. It's emotional for the Duxbury community. It's even emotional for you members of the media. But in the end, I bring it all back to the child victims in this case, Cora, Dawson, and Callan. This was and has always been about getting justice for those three little babies.
Back in a moment. Glad to get to your phone calls and emails. It's First Amendment Friday, 866. Hey, Lars, you're listening to the Lars Larson Show. You need to sell fast.
If you don't want to talk but want to be heard, email Lars at talk@larslarson.com. He actually will read it. Now, here's Lars Larson.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
Pumped by River City Environmental. That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
Hey, we're going to take things a bit out of order today because the defense attorneys for Lindsey Clancy are out making some comments. If that's still going on, let's jump to that audio right now.
Indicating that we're looking at sometime in the fall. And she'll be ready. She'll be ready.
Kevin over here, please.
This what would you say to that attorney who's been mocking the prosecutor, by the way?
What would you say to that
attorney wholly out of line?
I think I'll defer on that.
What about the judge in this case? Do you think he really delivered that to Rodriguez correctly, or you think he...
Well, as he said, that, you know, he knew that I wanted him to deliver it with a little more pizzazz, I think, was the line. But, you know, Judge Sullivan is by reputation known to be one of the best judges in the state. He's just a wonderful, wonderful man. He's got compassion. He's fair to jurors. He loves jurors. He's fair to the staff. And while I think about it, the people in the courtroom, Chrissy, the voice recorder, and Don, John, amazing. And the people that took care of Lindsay, the nurses, unbelievable. The court officers, Emily, all such wonderful people.
Talk about that.
He's also trying to gin up some sympathy for his client who's in a wheelchair because she threw herself out of a second-story window and caused her own injuries after she killed her kids.
He's not responsible. They were going to 11 jurors and trying to find her not guilty by reason.
This is the key question.
I think Mr. Cruz should revisit his facts and see whether or not he can even prove the case before he worries about whether or not they can bring those hired guns in. I wouldn't even call them hired guns, hired water pistols, and bring them in and have them testify as they did. They were totally incredible, unbelievable, and absolutely a waste of
time.
Kevin, please, we've been here from the beginning. Question for you.
This is your show, sir. This is your show.
We've been here from the very beginning. We saw how long jury selection took. You guys were diligent. You said you're so grateful for those 11 jurors. If this goes to a retrial on first degree, like you seem to think it
will. I want the same 11 jurors.
But I'm wondering, is there a jury in Plymouth County who can agree on this case?
Oh, whether or not they could agree is one thing. Obviously, if we didn't have that one individual, we would have had a verdict and we would be out of here.
Thank God for him, by the way.
But I don't know if we will ever be able to get jurors that aren't aware of this case anywhere. New York, Washington, Georgia, Japan, India, I don't know. Anywhere.
By the way, I want to mention this. Those 11 jurors that were convinced she was not guilty, but there was the one holdout. The one holdout, thank God for him, because but for that one juror saying, I am not going to vote that she is not guilty, and he did what he was supposed to do, he did what his oath required, and he saved us all from a not guilty finding for a woman who'd murder her kids.
Dr. Zeisel, Dr. Condi, Dr. Resnick, the same triumvirate, they'll be ready.
So and
no, doesn't have to be.
You said you were ready to retry this on Monday. Do you still feel like you could turn this around that quickly?
Yeah.
And do you feel there is something you would do differently with the second trial?
Why would I? I won the case.
Admit his strategy.
What are your comments about Cruz at this trial? You know, talking about the Clancy children. In the closing arguments.
I'll tell you what, we're going to jump out of this right now. It is First Amendment Friday. I want to get some of your phone calls and emails, but that is the slimy defense attorney, and he's proof positive of what we always believe about defense attorneys. They will do anything, absolutely anything, to put a criminal back on the streets. And in this case, Lindsay Clancy murdered her three kids, as far as I'm concerned. I know that legally they have not determined that yet. I know there were 11 jurors who heard the evidence and said, oh, we're ready to vote not guilty. Yeah, but thank God for that 12th juror. I'm going to put myself with the 12th juror. I believe that he was absolutely right. It is First Amendment Friday. Your calls are welcome at 866. Hey, Lars, let's start with Jason. Hey, Jason, welcome to the program. What do you want to say on First Amendment Friday?
Lars, how you doing, sir? Here's what I don't understand about that lady killing her kids.
Yeah.
You know, you talked earlier this week about a lady letting her 5-year-old walk to a pond in a closed gated community where he probably knows everybody.
Yep.
And then you've got this lady that kills her three kids, and they want to hang the lady that let her kid walk to a park?
Yeah, not hang her, you know? But they found, and I didn't think it was right that they found her guilt. I mean, that they cited her and said, you've been negligent toward your child, because he's inside of a gated community. He's walking half a mile. Yes, he's 5 years old, but apparently he's within a community in which they apparently strictly enforce the rules. So I didn't think, I mean, my parents, I was able to go places when I was his age and walk places
right,
on my
too.
Own. But I don't know that the two even yep. compare. This woman, Lindsay Clancy, and her attorneys would have you believe that postpartum depression doesn't just cause depression, but it causes murderous feelings. Where has anybody ever heard that before? That postpartum
I've
being depressed would cause you to want to kill three of your own children?
No, I've never heard of that in my life.
Now, you know what I have heard of before? I covered the Diane Downs case. There was a woman who tried to kill her three children. She succeeded with one.
Right.
Thank God she missed on the other two, and they got to grow up with a loving family of Fred Hughey. But Diane Downs wanted to kill her kids for romantic reasons. Now, I don't know what Lindsay
yes.
Clancy's motivation was, but apparently she was living with a loving husband who was running errands for her while she's at home trying to kill the kids. And she would have you believe, well, none of this was actually my fault. The fact is, there are women like Susan Smith, like Diane Downs. I mean, you can go right down a list of women who've tried to kill their kids, and usually it's out of the most selfish of motives, because of something they want or because of responsibilities they don't want. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Totally.
And I'm telling you,
It just dumbfounds me that they wouldn't find her guilty of murder.
It floors me as well that 11 people on that jury apparently were willing to vote to say she is not guilty of any crime whatsoever after choking the life out of her children. Coming up in a moment, a deadly wildfire destroys homes and burns thousands of acres in the Northwest, and one man is dead, and now a man is in custody charged with that capital crime. We'll talk to the local
Lars
sheriff.
The Lars Larson Show. Portland's news track. Interviews, podcasts, local and national news. Get it all at LarsLarson.com. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome back to the Radio Northwest Network, where we endeavor to serve the Pacific Northwest states of Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, and do it with honestly provocative talk on a daily basis. Now, you've probably heard that there was a deadly wildfire that not only took a man's life, but destroyed homes and burned up thousands of acres. And now, well, the investigators have arrested a young man, an adult, and they've charged him with a connection to that. But there are also other young men who are suspected to be connected as well. And I thought we'd get the straight skinny from Douglas County Sheriff, and this is Douglas County, Washington, not Oregon, Tyler Cale. Sheriff Cale, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Lars. Pleasure to be with you today.
What should we do with this? You've got one man in custody, he's charged, he has a right to his day in court. I get that. We know that there are several others, yep. perhaps as many as five, am I right, that may have been connected and will be sought and arrested perhaps and even charged in this case?
Oh, absolutely guaranteed. I made a promise to those folks that lost their homes, the family that lost their loved one, that we were going to bring those responsible to justice on who started that fire. We started that 2 days ago with the arrest of the 18-year-old main suspect that we were looking at. But as you may have heard, or you know, the listeners may have heard, they were traveling in a pickup down the highway, a group of them, and there's five others that were in that pickup who are all complicit to the same crime that our suspect was booked on and arraigned on yesterday. So yes, we will be. We'll be seeking those five as well, so there will be a total of six that will ultimately be charged for this tragic incident.
And Sheriff Cale, just to make it clear for my audience who may not know the details, they were blowing down the highway in a pickup truck, apparently drinking some allegedly stolen White Claw and shooting fireworks out of the back of the pickup truck?
Absolutely. And even the, on top of that, they were traveling the wrong way on the highway. They were paralleling a vehicle. They were both traveling northbound. So the suspect vehicle was actually in the southbound lane going the opposite direction that they should have been. And minus the driver and one other in the cab of this truck, the rest of them were in the bed of the truck committing this crime.
Now, tell me this, if you know, because I want people to understand, the people shooting the fireworks, certainly there's going to be a connection there. Do you connect the driver as well mm-hmm. and say, if you were driving the vehicle, whether you were directly participating or not, this is it's on you as well.
Absolutely. And that's where everybody else is going to be charged with the exact same charges. Our 18-year-old suspect the other day who was arrested was, but they're all complicit. They all have knowledge of what was going on. To this date, nobody has come forward and said, hey, I was in the truck. What happened was wrong, and I want to tell my story. Nobody's done that.
What does that tell you, Sheriff Hale? When you don't have anybody who steps forward and does the right thing even after the deeds are done, the fact that nobody's willing to say this was wrong and I was involved and I want to fess up, what does that tell you, Sheriff?
Mm-hmm. It tells me that we're dealing with immaturity to start with, and also no sense, honestly, no sense of compassion or even feelings towards what I'm confident they know they started. And I mean, this hasn't been hidden from the news. This has been going on. In fact, today is the 2-month anniversary from when the fire started. So, I mean, it's been no secret about what's happened and what we've been doing. I just can't believe they are still honestly keeping this to themselves and can't have some sort of a conscience to step forward and basically do the adult thing and at least fall on their sword at this point.
Well, in fact, your investigators had to seize, what, about 4 dozen different smartphones to get some of this evidence?
It wasn't quite 4 dozen, but they've seized several. I don't have the exact number. I don't think it was quite that high.
I thought it was 50, but I could be wrong.
Well, that was search warrants.
Okay.
So they've had to write over 50 search warrants in the last 2 months to get the evidence we needed to identify those involved and ultimately make the arrest 2 days ago. And then the other 5 that we'll be seeking, we're working on obtaining arrest warrants for those individuals now. But I had a press conference yesterday, and I basically called them all out, not by name, but by who they are. And we know who they are, and they know we know who they are, basically asking them to do the right thing and turn themselves in. Otherwise, we will come find them, and we will go find them. And if that means taking 5 patrol cars from Douglas County, Washington, and taking them to the west side of Washington to haul every single one of them back to central Washington, we'll do that.
And that's where most of them are, the other five?
Yes. Yeah. Everybody, all our suspects are all located in western Washington.
So in this case, do you have any confidence that the laws we've got on the books are going to give a proper, I guess, the proper punishment? Is there a proper punishment for something that destroys 100 structures, takes a man's life, puts other people at very close, mm-hmm. came very close to losing their lives? What would be the proper justice mm-hmm. for these guys?
Well, I mean, we all have our feelings about the judicial system. I have to have faith in what our prosecutor's office and ultimately our courts are going to do. I saw that yesterday when, after the press conference, when we did watch the preliminary appearance of our first suspect going from the judge, prosecutors, and we had meetings before. The prosecutor was going to ask for $2 million bail, which is for our area, that's significantly high. And I was very pleased to see the judge keep that at $1 million. I mean, we've seen court cases in other places, especially more on the western side of Washington, where prosecutors are asking for high bail and judges are letting people out with next to nothing, if not on their own personal recognizance. So I'm happy to see that the judge did see the seriousness of this crime, and he even vocalized that. But regardless of what happens in the court system, and you already touched on this, Lars, nothing is going to bring back the life of Mr. Lister, yeah. Who was the one who was caught in the fire trying to evacuate. It's not going to change the fact that six firefighters received injuries while trying to fight the fire. And it's also not going to replace the personal property, the homes, and the memories that over 20 residents in that area lost.
Sheriff, I really appreciate that. Sheriff Tyler Cale, who is the sheriff of Douglas County, Washington. You're listening to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show. This depends on efficient.
Surrounded by Northwest liberals.
I cannot stand these morons any longer. If you don't come with me this instant, I shall run amok.
Come to the place where common sense prevails. The Lars Larson Show.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's First Amendment Friday live on the Radio Northwest Network, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. And I would imagine a few people might have an opinion about this. Democrats, and this is from our Northwest Nonsense, the commentary I usually do at about 12:20, but we put that on hold to move it out of the way so that we could deal with what was going on with the Lindsey Clancy mistrial back in Plymouth, Massachusetts. But as far as I'm concerned, Democrats have nobody but themselves to blame for the vote-by-mail mess that they wished for and that they got. Just this week, Democrat U.S. Senator Maria Cantwell warned that a lot of ballots were getting rejected in the 2024 election for late postmarks, and the problem only got worse in this year's primaries. Now, I know the Democrats have been trying to blame this on Donald Trump. The problem is, if you already had a problem with late postmarks in 2024, do you know who was president in 2024? That would be President Auto Pen Joe Biden. Donald Trump didn't come back into office until 2025 last year. The number of rejected ballots went up 32% in this year's primaries. In some places, the numbers actually doubled. Now, Senator Cantwell blames postal workers because a lot of Democrat voters turn in tardy ballots. Former Democrat President Jimmy Carter warned that vote by mail is seriously flawed, and we've seen the evidence in spades lately. Foreign nationals getting ballots thanks to driver's licenses for illegal aliens, which were championed by who? By the Democrat Party. Democrat secretaries of state in both Oregon and Washington who refused to clean up the false registrations in voter mails and voter rolls until they are actually sued. And then they do clean them up. Oregon has had to remove about 800,000 faulty registrations. And Democrats on Capitol Hill, including U.S. Senator Cantwell, who refused to pass the Save America Act that only requires picture ID and proof of citizenship that's actually backed by 80% of all Americans. And then they turn around and say, we're going to blame this on Donald Trump. Please. Our question of the day, brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, no surgery. Fix what's actually causing the problem at Multnomah Medical Clinic. Jim writes in, Lars, I was at the DEQ, that's where they test the vehicles, getting my new license plate tags for $190, and then saw an extra $25 tagged on for DEQ. I understand the want for a DEQ before catalytic converters came along so we could feel better about how much carbon we were putting in the air, even if mathematically it would not make much difference in the grand scheme of things. But what got me thinking was this. I paid $25 for DEQ, the minimum wage $16.30 an hour. There are about four or more people on staff and only three cars going through. Add in employer-paid benefits and taxes to all of that. I'm thinking I might have paid for 1 hour of one person. How much is DEQ running in the red for the Department of Transportation to verify the probably less than 10% of the cars that don't pass anymore? Maybe that could be pulled from ODOT, shut down, and help them balance their budget. Just a thought. Love your show. Signed, Jim. Well, Jim, you're absolutely right. In fact, Washington State has already discontinued doing that emissions testing of automobiles. And why? Because we have so many brand new automobiles and newer automobiles that are actually run on chips in which the emissions are controlled, and you really can't do much to change the car the way you used to be able to do it with non-fuel injected cars and cars that didn't run based on chips. So Washington State already discontinued the DEQ testing. Oregon does it mostly because if they stopped, they'd have to find some other job for all those state employees, and I don't think they know where they can find that kind of job. So you're absolutely right about it. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's on First Amendment Friday at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. My favorite post on X today, and this was actually posted by Democrat Governor Bob Ferguson of Washington. He wrote, "I want Washingtonians to know about the upcoming impacts of the Big Bad Betrayal Bill." It's actually the One Big Beautiful Bill signed by Donald Trump. Starting October 1st, H.R. 1 drastically limits Medicaid eligibility for lawfully present immigrants. Before the state took action, 14,000 lawful immigrants were set to lose their Apple Health coverage. Starting January 1, more than 600,000 Washingtonians will be subject to work requirements for the first time in order to keep their Apple Health coverage. That's Medicaid. These individuals will also be required to reapply twice as frequently. I'm going to give you the facts on this one because I don't think Bob Ferguson wants to tell you the facts. Number one, when the Congress passed H.R. 1, the One Big Beautiful Bill, they did say we're not going to pay for Medicaid for people who are not citizens of this country. That's not who the program is for. If anybody objects to that, I'd love to hear the naysayer call. Explain to me why somebody who emigrated to the United States and promised they would not become a public charge, that is, they wouldn't become a welfare case, tell me why we should pay for Medicaid for them. Number two, about the work requirements. Yes, they've told people on Medicaid, if you're on Medicaid, and the following three things are true. Number one, you have no small children at home to take care of. Number two, you are of working age, so you're not a child and you're not elderly. You're somewhere between, say, 18 and 60 years of age. And number three, you're sound of mind and sound of body, which means you don't have a mental illness impairment. You don't have a physical impairment. Yes, you have to work 20 hours a week to qualify for Medicaid. Again, if somebody thinks that's unfair, I'd love to hear the argument why. Apparently, our representatives on Capitol Hill think it's entirely fair. And then reapply twice as often. Yeah, used to be they checked you every 2 years for Medicaid eligibility. And if you were good to go in 24, you were good to go until they rechecked you 2 years later. Now they want to check you every 6 months. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you
ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Oregon City Garage Door.
I want to give today's Daily Grill to the current governor of Oregon, although that won't be true, I think, after January of next year, because she's going to be replaced in the November election by Christine Drazen, to Governor Tina Kotek. And why? As Drazen points out, Tina Kotek gave those data centers over $1 billion in tax breaks while at the same time raising the taxes on hardworking Oregonians by more than $6 billion. Tina Kotek gets the Daily Grill. It's First Amendment Friday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. FM News 101. Welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
Hey, looks like the Canadians are here.
call 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday.
This is
First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And I was glad I woke up to some great news in the national job numbers today. The national job numbers were much stronger than anybody expected them to be. So then that made me wonder, why are the small businesses in the state of Washington still hesitant to hire? I thought we'd put that question to Patrick Connor, who is the Washington State Director for the National Federation of Independent Business. Mr. Connor, welcome back to the program.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here again.
First of all, I want to ask you about the new jobs number that came out for the month of August, 165,000 jobs, and that was dramatically more than the economists had expected there would be. What does that mean for us?
Well, it's great news nationwide. Unfortunately, I think that wave of hiring is bypassing Washington State.
But do you have a theory as to why it's bypassing Washington State?
The cost of doing business. If you ask small business owners on any main street in Washington, they will tell you the top concern is taxes. The next concern is the high cost of labor, followed by regulations, and then the quality of the candidates that they're trying to hire.
So almost all of those things are things that the state government could have an effect on if it chose to, right?
And has, absolutely.
Well, I mean, it has, but not in a good way, in a bad way. So if the state of Washington said, we're going to lower taxes, we're going to lower regulation. Oh, and by the way, we're going to make sure our schools work great, which means the people who are going to school, both college and K through 12 public school, are better candidates for jobs. They could have an effect on all of that, but they've chosen not to, right?
Yeah. In fact, Olympia has gone exactly the opposite direction. We've seen back to back multi-billion dollar tax increases squarely on Main Street employers. In fact, the so-called millionaire tax, the income tax, specifically targets small businesses. We've seen year-over-year assaults on the workers' compensation program, leading to increases in premiums coming there. Again, basically a 5% per year increase has been averaged. We're bracing for increases in unemployment insurance premiums from 2027 through 2029. We're also looking at increases to paid family medical leave program. That's before we even talk about the automatic increases to the minimum wage or to the many other regulations that are strangling Main Street and keeping them from creating the jobs and growing the economy the way that our communities so desperately need.
All right. So why are we not seeing any evidence that the folks in charge, the folks who are in the majority in the case of Olympia, the state legislature, the Democrats, are not either listening to that or paying attention to that? Why not?
Well, we keep bringing these issues to their attention. Unfortunately, big labor has got the ear of the legislature, the trial lawyers, and other interest groups that return votes and dollars to their campaigns. So the business community is often given a pat on the head as bad decisions are made, despite our warnings that it's going to cost jobs and economic growth.
So does this just keep going downhill in until what? We hit the bottom? Do we become the Appalachia of the West Coast?
Well, luckily, Washington has got a lot of things going for it. We've got a beautiful natural environment. We've got a thriving tech economy. But we're seeing cracks in that economic climate. I mean, we're seeing major corporations and their leadership leave for greener pastures. I'm sure you've talked in previous programs about some of those marquee businesses and business leaders who have fled to Florida or elsewhere. But we're starting to see an exodus of small business owners across state borders as well. In fact, we have got a member who's an avid listener of yours down in Vancouver who is actively looking to relocate her telecommunications company to Arizona. Wow. Or somewhere else that's more welcoming to small businesses.
Wow.
We've got a member in the Seattle area who his business has been a member of NFIB basically since we started. So the longest continuous serving member in the country. He's not going in Washington State. Instead, he's opening new branches in Utah, in Idaho, in Nevada, So this is a problem that we are seeing. It's real, and it is happening every day with small businesses looking to leave Washington State or actively packing up their operations and relocating elsewhere.
I'm talking to Patrick Connor, who's the Washington State Director for the NFIB, the National Federation of Independent Business. Please tell that listener that I appreciate them listening. I'd like to still be in business. But here's the thing I don't understand. This seems like we're starting to circle the drain. And by that, I mean you raise taxes, you raise regulations, then you have fewer businesses because people abandon ship and they go elsewhere in the country. So then you notice your revenue is down, so you raise taxes some more and raise regulations some more. And at some point, you don't even have the choice to say, why don't we cut back on the regulations or cut back on taxes, because you're already, you're going down every time you raise those numbers to try to get more money in the door to satisfy state government. You're going to increase the exodus of the businesses that are paying the taxes. Is there any way to get that process reversed?
It would take swift, decisive action by Washington State voters. We need to pay attention to what's happening in Olympia. We need to realize that chances are good it is your legislator who is the problem. Take a look at how they're voting. Are they voting for these taxes? Are they voting for these regulations? Are they voting voting on bills that result in more and more of our Main Street shops being vacant?
See, I don't necessarily disagree with you that it takes decisive action by voters, but let me point something out. In the state of Oregon, because I follow both states, state of Oregon had a legislature that finally raised taxes or tried to raise taxes about a year ago by several billion dollars. And the voters said, no, you don't. And they threw it on the ballot and they voted it down. And they didn't vote it down soft. They voted it down hard. They said no 83% statewide. 83%. That goes beyond a landslide. And even in the liberal environments of Multnomah County, which is comparable to King County for liberalism, it was 70% no and 30% yes, which suggests there's a serious disconnect. The people in Olympia and Salem are not listening, even when the voters tell them loudly, don't do this. Because you know what the next thing they did was? They started putting together plans for, well, we could find some other things we could tax. And I keep wondering when I see that, were you not listening when they said no very, very loudly? Even your liberal friends in Multnomah County said no very loudly, and you weren't listening at all? And it seems they in Olympia and Salem, they don't really care what the public says anyway.
You make a very good point. And in fact, NFIB was pleased to be a part of that campaign that you mentioned, where Oregon voters wisely woke up and rejected, overwhelmingly rejected, that transportation tax package. We're hopeful that Washington voters will follow that lead and do the same with the income tax with yep. Initiative 645.
And you know what, Patrick? I have a feeling they're going to do exactly that, and the Democrats will be just as thick-headed about it. That's Patrick Connor. He's Washington State Director for NFIB. Patrick, it's a pleasure. Have a wonderful Labor Day weekend. Back in a moment, we'll talk about our friend John Fetterman, Democrat, but not all that liberal anymore.
Taxes. What say you, Robin Hood?
So you think you're overtaxed?
Overtaxed, overworked, and paid off with a knife, a club, or a rope?
Why, you speak treason.
Fluently.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's First Amendment Friday. Always glad to get your calls. Of course, naysayers always go to the head of the line at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. Like Sam Phillips, who said, Lars, so a mistrial in the Clancy case is the verdict. Help me out, Lars. These murders were years ago, and now a new trial date has been set, and Lindsey Clancy goes back to a mental institution. After all this time in the institution, doesn't the faculty there have an evaluation of her by now, or did I miss something? You're going to know that she's going to stay in custody, but I have a feeling that once all the trials are over, you watch her go to the shrinks and say, I'm feeling much better now. And she'll end up getting out if that is the verdict in a future trial. Now, let's hope that it is not. And this one from Derek. Lars, the jurors know right from wrong, but value political agendas more. They may think if Clancy is found guilty, it'll take more effort to push for abortion or the legal killing of children after birth. And you're right. And Cindy writes, and Lars, it's very common for young women to subsidize their stay-at-home income by opening up a home daycare. Some are licensed by the state, many are not. Either way, there are young women with young babies of their own caring for children other than their own in their own homes alone. I hope the Lindsay Clancy case makes people think twice before posting on Facebook for babysitters or trusting the neighborhood mom for daycare. The women who are sympathetic to Lindsay because she killed her own children may be less so if she killed their children or their nieces and nephews as well. And this one from G. Murray. Lars, shouldn't you at least consider the evidence before making a judgment? Well, I did. Maybe, just maybe, the combo of drugs had some impact, but I don't know what she was taking. Do you? The fact that she took the life of her three children is insane, period. Guilty of murder, according to the law, is another matter. Well, if you define killing somebody as evidence of insanity, I guess you could simply say then nobody should go to prison for killing anybody, except I don't think that's what we want the law to say. Let's go to Richard. Hey, Richard, welcome to the Lars Larson Show on First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
Lars, thank you for taking my call. This has to do with the Gap Fire here on Horse Creek on the Klamath River in 2016.
Yeah.
And it was an arson fire. It was 10 years ago. And the final report is, if I may read it, it's very short. Good afternoon. The subject of the public release of the report of investigation for the 2016 Gap Fire is classified as attorney-client privileged document, and you will not be, and so will not be released under the Freedom of Information Act as you have requested. Period. That's it. We know who the arsonist was. They've never contacted us about what we know. We, the people of Horse Creek, are the victims of a crime. They have never asked us what we know.
I'll tell you what, Richard, you send me the information. I will promise to follow up on it and see what I can find out. Because I don't know how, if they had a report, what was the agency that did the report on the Gap Fire that's called attorney-client privilege?
It would be the investigating arm in Vallejo, California. And our district attorney in Siskiyou County contacted them. And so you might want to contact our district attorney, and he can talk to you about what he
learned. Send me the information that you have, and I'll be glad to take a look at it. And I appreciate your call. Let's go to Troy in Oak Harbor. Hey, Troy, thanks for listening. Glad to get you your phone call and email. What's on your mind?
Okay, two questions I just want to ask about. How can there be expansion of Medicare? How would they do it? And what would the Democrats
Medicare
do?
Or Medicaid? Because they're different. Medicare is
no,
for the old. Medicaid
I heard over
is
the radio
the,
Democrats want to expand Medicare. I heard that on the radio.
There are two things that could be. Number one, if they're talking about Medicaid, which is insurance for the poor, they've already expanded Medicaid dramatically under Obamacare. And, of course, there are Democrats all over America who want to expand Medicaid to cover illness and other people who are not covered by it right now. As far as Medicare goes, there are people on the left who want to have what they call Medicare for all. In other words, universal health care. But the way they would build it is by saying, let's just take Medicare, which now applies to America's elderly, and simply extend it out so it's available to everybody in the country. Now, it's a ridiculous idea. It's gigantically expensive, and it would be run by, well, you'd have your health care being run by the same folks who run the post office and Amtrak and other failed institutions. So which one is it you're interested in?
Well, the one you mentioned, Bernie Sanders' ideas about Medicare for all, that has me worried if the Democrats win in November. And then about the Iran war situation, what could they do about that if they were in charge?
If they were in charge, you know what they'd do? I think they'd want to hand free nuclear weapons to the folks who run Iran. I mean, consider what the two presidents who had the greatest say-so about what happened in Iran, that's Obama and then Biden following him, that Obama gave them plane loads of cash. and they're one of the biggest terrorist organizations on planet Earth. So did Obama actually, he said the right things about not allowing Iran to have nuclear weapons, but he didn't actually do anything that would stop them from getting nuclear weapons. He had what's called the JCPOA, which was that paper agreement. It should have been a treaty, and it should have been reviewed by the U.S. Senate. It never was, which means I don't think it was valid anyway. But having said that, he thought that that would push off their aspirations to get nuclear weapons by maybe 10 years. But that's all that it would do. So do I believe the Democrats think it's critical to make sure that Iran is never nuclear armed? No, I don't think they care about it. Do you?
Yeah, that's what I'm worried about. Medicare for all, I don't see if the American people overall would go along with expanding and as far as Iran, a lot of people don't realize what they're playing around with. Iran, well, of course, they're firing on ships transiting the Straits of Hormuz. I know we have a depleted military, and I know
But remember, our military is still perfectly capable of fighting. I think all the people on the left-hand side of the aisle, on the media, and among the politicians on the left, they would like to dismiss the U.S. military as ineffective. I don't think it's ineffective at all. In fact, I think it's very effective. I think everybody on this planet understands it, except the Democrat Party and maybe the New York Times. You've got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. Portland Truth Bomb.
My favorite thing about living in Portland is no matter how many fentanyl overdoses happen, no matter how many tents get set up, you can't blame black people for that.
Back to Lars.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'll be glad to get to your phone calls and emails. I do have to say that it seems somewhat ironic that we're talking about this subject on the same day that a jury trial had to be declared a mistrial in the trial of Lindsay Clancy for allegedly murdering her three children. I think she did murder her three children. I think the jury just couldn't bring itself to make that decision. But consider all that in the background while you consider this. A Washington teenager who says she was assaulted on the mat during a wrestling match, and the school allegedly sat on that information for 55 days, will the federal courts actually step in before she's forced to go back on the mat? Well, on the phone with me right now is Hal Frampton, and I welcome Mr. Frampton to the show. He's a senior counsel, meaning he's a senior lawyer with the Alliance Defending Freedom, and an attorney representing Washington high school wrestler Callie Keller, whose case we've been talking about quite a bit and involves a Title IX lawsuit. Ms. Frampton, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Lars. Happy to be here.
Well, I have to tell you that I know you don't say bad things about the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, but I don't have the greatest respect for them. Occasionally they get one right. But in this case, is the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals a federal appeals court? Are they going to act in the right way and do right by Callie Keller, Keeler about this Title IX lawsuit that she's brought, which seems fairly simple? She's a wrestler. She's been a wrestler a long time. She was forced to wrestle somebody she thought was a girl. The information that she was in fact wrestling a young man was held from her by the school that she attends and by the schools that run these athletic events. Is she going to get real justice from the courts?
Well, we certainly hope so. We're asking the court for two things. One, frankly, feels like a no-brainer, and that is simply just give her mom notice before she's set to wrestle a male so that she can make the decision whether to wrestle in that match or more likely to sit it out. But that's it. We're just asking for notice of something that clearly affects her daughter's physical safety. That's well within the parental rights enshrined in the Constitution and should be an easy one. And then the second, as you say, is the Title IX issue of saying just restore the original meaning of Title IX, its original purpose, and make girls' sports for girls.
Yeah, because allowing biological males to take part in girls' sports, doesn't that pretty well gut everything that Title IX was all about? Which, back in the day when men's sports was the thing, and girls' sports was an afterthought at best, and in many cases didn't exist the way it exists today, and there were people who reasonably said, hey, if you're going to have opportunities for young men, you should have equal opportunities for young women. And I think most people said that's the way it should be. So we get Title IX out of that, and it says you've got to have opportunities for young women. And now, because of politics, we're now going to take those opportunities for young women and give them to biological men who say they identify as women? It seems like a really cruel joke or a Babylon Bee parody of some kind.
Well, it's turning the clock back for no reason at all. As you noted, Title IX recognized and Congress recognized back in the 70s when they passed it that the only way to provide equal athletic opportunities for women and girls was to have women's sports, because otherwise, if you let men into women's sports, then they're not fair and they're not safe, particularly in high contact, high collision sports like wrestling. That's why we have women's sports to start with, and it's exactly what Title IX was enacted to promote. And now, all of a sudden in states like Washington, we're turning back the clock to the bad old days when all that mattered were men's sports.
I know. What is the alternate argument going to be made by the other side? Because surely there's another side in this. The schools are going to walk into court and argue what, Mr. Frampton?
They argue that this is not within the parental rights protected by the Constitution, that there's no, they sort of mischaracterize it as if we're trying to change the way that they administer their sports when we're really not. We're simply saying when you've got something as consequential to a child's physical safety as asking a girl to take the wrestling mat against a male athlete, that's something her parents should know about and they should be able to make an informed decision about. And I think that's well within what the Supreme Court has said falls within parental rights. Things that affect a child's health and welfare are parents' decisions, not schools' decisions.
Well, in fact, Mr. Frampton, isn't the law full of all kinds of notice requirements in just about every area? I mean, in criminal law, in civil law, in employment law. I mean, I'm a non-lawyer, but I think I could probably name dozens of different occasions where the law says, if you're going to do X, you have to provide notice of Y, Z, and Q to these people. And if you don't provide notice, it's on you. And yet in this one, the other side is going to say, no, there's no requirement for notice whatsoever.
And it's really amazing. I mean, you know, like every other school out there, they can get permission to go on a field trip, but somehow not to pit a girl wrestler against a male.
Yeah, because if you want to go on that field trip, you've got to get permission from mom before you go to the Museum of Natural History. You know, I mean, things that are, by comparison, are pretty inconsequential compared to taking the wrestling mat unknowingly against a male.
Exactly. And that's why we're urging the court to find that we know that the Constitution enshrines parental rights. The Supreme Court has just reaffirmed that the past two terms. And they've said that things that are critical to a child's mental health are part of the parental rights that the Constitution protects. Well, this is physical health and safety. This is a deeply consequential decision about whether you're going to let a child do something that is unsafe. That should be something they have to get a parent's permission for.
I'm talking to a senior counsel with the Alliance Defending Freedom, Hal Frampton. Last issue, and that's this. You've asked for emergency action. By that, you want quick action. Why? By September 25th.
Well, we need action very quickly in order to preserve Callie's ability to wrestle this season. If we don't get something quickly, she's not going to be able to, because under the current system, the school is essentially saying, we're not giving you notice of anything. If you don't want to wrestle against a male, don't wrestle. And we're saying, court, we need you to step in here so that Callie can wrestle and do the sport that she loves in a way that is fair and is safe and protects her mother's parental rights.
Mr. Franklin, wish Kelly our best, and tell her that I know that there are Americans out there who support exactly what she's doing, and they don't at all support the idea that the public schools are going to force this on young girls and tell them, you have to wrestle against biological males. You have no choice whatsoever. Mr. Franklin, thanks for the time. Back in a moment. It's First Amendment Friday, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Something to say? Give Lars a call at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, welcome back to the program. Before I go to your calls, my favorite email of the day is brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, no surgery. Fix what's actually causing the problem at Multnomah Medical Clinic. Linda Sweeney, who signs herself a loyal fan, says, Dear Lars, I take issue with your stance on Lindsay Clancy. Assuming that this AI report is true, Clancy's been treated for postpartum mental health issues, anxiety and depression after earlier births, more severe problems after Callan's birth in May of 2022. She sought care, was prescribed several multiple psychiatric medications, called a suicide hotline, and had a brief inpatient stay at a psychiatric hospital weeks before the killings. Please correct me if I'm wrong. Are you saying that a nurse, a person whose years of education and career is built on helping people heal and alleviate suffering, would be in a normal state of mind to murder her own children? A labor and delivery nurse. These nurses almost never change specialties due to their love of children. No, I'm not saying that anybody who murders is in their right mind. I mean, by that, if you took that standard and said, if you murder somebody, you are automatically judged to be mentally ill, then nobody would ever be guilty of murder. All she needed to know, though, was did she understand the criminal nature of what she was doing at the time she was doing it? I think she did. Why do you think she sent her husband off on an errand while she murdered the three children? The reason she got him out of the house is she knew that what she was doing was wrong. The second question you should ask yourself is why did she allegedly try to commit suicide? Now, jumping out of a second-story window does not seem likely to kill you, and in her case, it didn't. It merely paralyzed her. But it might have been a great way if she was either trying to escape or if she was trying to injure herself badly enough that she would bring sympathy on herself. But why would she feel she needed sympathy? If she had just murdered her kids, but she really didn't understand the criminal nature of what she was doing, why would she feel guilty at all? Now to your calls. Let's go to Eric, who's a naysayer. Eric, we love naysayers on this program, especially on First Amendment Friday. Welcome to the program. Tell me what you and I disagree about that makes you a naysayer.
Well, it's just the double standards. In the 90s, I wrestled varsity. And all the lightweights had to go against females, and we didn't want to. And they forced us. And if you had any chivalry, you'd have to just forfeit your match and let them win. Otherwise, it was the same thing. It's like they get to play whatever they want, and the boys get forced to wrestle.
Well, hold and on if a they second. Wanted to play, you're talking about in the, you're talking about a third of a century ago, you say you were forced to wrestle co-ed. Today, that's not the situation. This young lady walked into a match. She is a wrestler who wrestles other females, and she walks into a match believing that she's going to wrestle a female when, in fact, the school has sneaked in a transgender, meaning a biological male who says he identifies as female. Isn't that very different than having forced co-ed wrestling?
It is different. You're right. It is different. But we didn't get a say in the matter. We didn't.
Well, sure you did. You could have said, I'm not going to wrestle co-ed, right?
There was no co-ed. It's boys wrestling Morgan. And if a girl just gets a wild tear in her butt.
You said you were forced to wrestle against girls, correct?
No. If we want to, if we, you'd trash them. You'd wreck a girl if you had to wrestle them. But they were still matched up with you. So if you were in a tournament, you had to wrestle them or you're going to lose the tournament.
No, but then like again, I'm calling that co-ed, meaning if they told
it
you.
It isn't. I didn't sign up for co-ed, just like football. A girl could get on the football team, but I couldn't play on the volleyball team. I would have wrecked them in volleyball.
So I guess we don't disagree at all. Do you think it's reasonable to have young men
compete in sports against... The school districts are stupid, and they give women special treatment. The boys didn't get to do that crap, just the girls.
Well, except in this case, Eric, what you're hearing is that the school districts are giving a special treatment to the boys. Do you hear why? Because if a young man says, I identify as a girl, they say, oh, you can wrestle against girls, or you can run track and field.
Instead of having the feminist mindset that we had since the 60s, now we get the tranny mindset.
Yeah, that's what you get. You get the transgender mindset that says whatever the transgender wants to do, they get to do. And you women, you're going to have to suck it up, because it really doesn't affect males in sports, does it?
It doesn't. But it just tells you how bad the feminist crap was for the past 40 years.
Well, if what you call the feminist crap, I didn't have any problem with the idea that if you have men's sports, that you should afford an equal opportunity, not a result, but an opportunity to young women. So if you said, tougher when you have...
Because I never could get an equal opportunity to play volleyball.
There were no men's volleyball teams?
Heck no, there still ain't in Oregon.
Well, and then somebody needs to start them. But... Are there men's sports for which there is no female?
If it was a girl that wanted to, they'd get to.
Fact, there are famous cases of that, but usually because the girls are physically smaller than and less powerful than the men, right?
We're all equal, Lars. We're just perfectly equal.
We're born equal, and we're equal in the eyes of the law. But I get what you're saying. All I'm saying is this one only cuts against the women and in favor of the men. It cuts in favor of the men because it means that when a man says he identifies as a woman, he gets to compete against women, and then he has a built-in advantage. He can run faster. He can lift more. He's got more physical strength, and he gets to use that advantage, and he gets to use it to his advantage. The young woman does not have that. By the way, are you ready to be done being a landlord? My Rocket Listing lets you sell your property guaranteed, even with non-paying tenants. Do this. Go to nickshivers.com. That's nickshivers.com. Glad to be with you, and always glad to take your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And if you believe in supporting American craftsmanship, veterans, and Independence Hawk Radio, go to my website and pick up a limited edition Lars Larson Show Challenge coin. Proudly made by American veterans, everyone comes with a personally signed thank you card, and all proceeds, all of them, from the Lars Larson Show Challenge coin, go to benefit American veterans. Glad to have you with us on a First Amendment Friday. Your emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com, and you can also vote in our X poll question. You'll find that at Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.
FM News 101. Welcome to First Amendment Friday on the Lars Larson Show.
Friday is for everybody.
Today, Lars puts you in the driver's seat. You talk about what you want to talk about.
Government is the problem.
No topic is off limits.
It looks like the Canadians are here.
866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-HEY-LARS.
Thank goodness it's Friday. Happy Friday.
This is
First Amendment Friday with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's First Amendment Friday, my favorite day of the week, because we open up the phone lines and every subject is fair game. And as is always the case, naysayers go to the head of the line. So if you call in 866-HEY-LARS and you find that you disagree with me on something, we put you first in line at 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Now, I want to talk about the jobs report, because the number of jobs that came in for last month, report just came in today, and it came in much, much stronger than any of the economists had actually expected, about three times as strong. But Donald Trump thinks we could have an even better situation in America's economy. We could get those interest rates down. So I thought it was a perfect opportunity to talk to our friend Vance Ginn, who is president of Let People Prosper and former chief economist at the White House Office of Management and Budget during the Donald Trump first term in office. Vance, good to have you back. What's on your mind?
Well, Lars, it's great to be with you. And yeah, we've got this new jobs report out here, and just looking at the pros and the cons. I think there's a lot of good in there, but there's still some concerns that we should definitely discuss.
Okay, let's talk about it. Why did the number, the gross overall number, come in three times what was expected? Any idea why?
You know, I don't know the exact reason, but I know when you look at the breakdown of the data, there was 162,000 jobs that were added in the month of August. A lot of those jobs were looking at local government education jobs, so maybe back to school, right? Although there's some of the seasonal adjustments that should take care of that, so it would have to be in addition to what they normally have, the increase in teachers. But we also saw an increase in construction and manufacturing jobs, so that was also really important. So I don't know exactly why there was three times above, but maybe it was because a lot of these teachers were going back to work as well.
Maybe that's it, although, like you said, usually they seasonally adjust those things out.
Right.
Same reason they break out farm jobs as separate from others, because farm jobs tend to be seasonal. Let's talk about Donald Trump's desire to get interest rates down, because personally, I'd like to see interest rates come down as well. I want to see it made easier for Americans to be able to buy a house or buy a car, and I'd like to see it made easier for people who own businesses to be able to expand and be able to make their business bigger. But his approach is he wants to stop trading with countries with which the United States has a deficit. He says high interest rates put the USA at a very unfair disadvantage, and I won't let that happen. Is that the right way to pursue this?
Well, there's a lot going on here, Lars, but I mean, when you look at the low the higher interest rates that are right now, and he's wanting to lower them, one thing that you have to ask is, okay, what does that mean? Well, what that means is that the Federal Reserve would need to print more money, buy more bonds on the secondary market, and then push more money out into the economy. And that helps to bring down those interest rates when you increase the demand for bonds.
Right.
But if you have more money supply, then you're likely to get more inflation. And that inflation is what's really been hurting this affordability issue across the United States. And even in August, with the latest jobs report, it showed average hourly earnings were up about 3.1%, but inflation is running 3.5% year over year. So people are falling behind. They can't buy as much as they did before. So I'm cautious that we should be lowering interest rates, although I agree with you. It'd be fantastic to have lower interest rates for, you know, mortgages and investment and things of that nature. But it also could mean we get higher inflation, and I don't think that Americans want that right now.
Okay, so let me ask you this. You say we'd have to either print more money, or would one of the alternatives be if the federal government spent less money, that could give us lower interest rates as well, couldn't it? I mean, if the change was enough.
Yes. Now that's this. I totally agree with that. That's where one of the main pro-growth policies that I've been advocating for right now is to cut spending. Spending has to come out of the economy somehow, either through higher taxes, more debt, or more inflation. And so if you lowered government spending today, that would bring down the deficits. And so therefore the Federal Reserve wouldn't have to monetize or buy back that debt, creating inflation. So, you know, cutting government spending would be a first step to really helping bring down the interest rates.
I mean, to some extent, Trump's done that in that he's had a not inconsiderable reduction in total federal employment, isn't it? Several hundred thousand people who used to work for the federal government and don't any longer. That's a chunk of spending right there, isn't it? But is it big enough?
Yeah, I mean, yes, there has been a couple, I think it was 150,000 or more jobs from the federal government that have been cut, and that's great news in my view. But that's still a small portion of the overall budget. When you talk about a $7 trillion budget, that's just a rounding error. What we really got to do is get control of our healthcare spending, you know, the transportation spending. A lot of, you know, two thirds of the budget really is Social Security and Medicare.
Yeah.
And then you have defense. And then you have very little that's left in discretion that it seems like there's not the political will to do anything with the big guys, with the big spending items. But I think we have to in order to help our economy, help people be able to invest and grow the economy.
Well, let me ask you this. I don't know if it would fit in with what you do at Let People Prosper, but I'm talking to Van Skin, who's the former chief economist at the White House OMB. If you said on Medicare, let's have a copay. Now, right now, aren't there either fairly low or almost no copays when it comes to Medicare, or am I wrong about that? I don't know because I'm not on it.
Yeah, no, that's right. When you're under Medicare, there will be lower copays for sure, yes.
Well, okay, wouldn't an economist say if you want to bring down, you know, either misuse or overuse of any resource, charge a copay on it? And if you were to say, yeah, let's impose a copay and make it small enough, you know, that it's not going to keep anybody from getting medical care. But if people, and I have to say this, but I know a number of people that are older than me that love going to the doctor. I think they like the reassurance they get from that. And the fact is, it doesn't cost them anything. But if all of a sudden every doctor visit was, you know, $5 or $10 or $20, and you say, wow, I got to stop going to the doctor three times a week because it's costing me some money, and go only when I really need to go, would that have the effect of reining in, say, Medicare spending?
It could, but like I said, Medicare, there's already a copay. A lot of people will have supplemental insurance that they'll combine with it to help, yep, bring down the copay even more. So at least on Medicare, you do pay in, like when you go to the doctor. Medicaid, right, for the low-income folks is the one that has no copay.
Well, let's have one there.
Maybe there should be. Yeah, exactly.
Not only that, but let's reemphasize, which I know Trump's already doing, saying let's have work rules when it comes to Medicaid. Oh, and by the way, yeah, we're not paying for non-citizens. We're not paying for illegal aliens especially. Vance, keep up the good work at Let People Prosper, and we appreciate your time. That's Vance Ginn. He is an economist, former chief economist at the White House Office of Management and Budget. And Vance, it's a pleasure to have you on the program. Glad to get to your calls on a First Amendment Friday. If you want to dial into the best conversation in talk journalism, it's here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And on this program, naysayers always go to the head of the line. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
Wait, ma'am.
Disagree with Lars? Great. Naysayers go first at 866-HEY-LARS. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. As I'm sure you've already heard, a mistrial was declared in the case of Lindsey Clancy, which means the prosecutor will have to decide whether or not to retry that case. I would imagine they are going to do that, although today the district attorney, Tim Cruz, had announced that they will decide that at some point this month, but not right now. So I'm interested in hearing what people have to say about this. You've heard my take on it as well. I think the woman murdered her kids. I think she deserves to be locked up in prison. I think she should not be excused because of postpartum depression. But Mike is a naysayer. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program on First Amendment Friday. What do you and I disagree about?
Yeah, Lars, I disagree that she should be locked up. I think that Clancy should be given some really good care, some really good nutrition, and rehabilitated, and she'll be fine.
Well, hold on a second. When you say you want her rehabilitated, rehabilitated from what? She's saying there was nothing wrong with her except during those 18 minutes when she was murdering her kids, that she wasn't crazy before that, and she isn't crazy after that. In fact, she apparently felt enough remorse that she says she tried to take her life by jumping out a second-story window. So what does she need rehabilitation from?
I think she needs real rehabilitation from all the pharmacological abuse that was heaped on her by two different hospitals and three different health professionals. They had her on four different antidepressants, three different anti-anxiety drugs, three different sleep aids, a mood stabilizer, and an antipsychotic, and she'd been on some of those since 2022.
Yeah, we don't know whether she was on them simultaneously. I got the sense from the testimony that she was not, that she was on those drugs at various times. Well, if somebody goes to the mental health system and says, I am depressed and I'm not sleeping well. In fact, the testimony at trial was she sometimes went as long as 48 hours without sleeping. What should they give her if not sleep aids and things to avoid her going psychotic? What should they have been giving her?
What they should do with any woman who's popped out like three babies within 4 years, they should absolutely give them a blood test to see what's deficient in them, because it takes a lot out of a woman to make that many babies.
So you think that being low on iron or being low on some other mineral is what caused her to murder her kids?
Could be. Well, it could be a combination of that and the pharmaceuticals, but this has been going on for many, many years.
Well, no, hold on, Mike. How often do we ever, I mean, lately we've heard about a number of women who've murdered their children, and sometimes they claim that it's because of postpartum, sometimes they do not, but it's not a very common thing, is it?
Well, I don't know how common it is. I know that it's...
We're a country of 350 or so million people. We have about 3.5 million babies born every year in this country. Out of 3.5 million babies a year born, how many do you hear where the mother decides to murder the baby after the baby was born?
Oh, very few.
And right. And that's what I'm saying. It's not very common at all.
Yeah, and it's a thing, though, even though it isn't common because it's so drastically bad, I say they should all be blood tested, see what they're deficient in, and supplement them for that.
No, oh, hold on.
Throw in a
so,
good,
Mike, you're not going to have any consequence for this woman killing her kids at all?
Well, no, not any punishing consequences, except that she should get off the pharmaceuticals. She should get some good therapy.
Why should she escape punishment? She murdered three children.
She did it under the influence of drugs, and she did it as a result of postpartum psychosis. And
I've heard from both men and women about postpartum. How often do you ever hear about postpartum depression causing somebody to be murderous?
Well, that's what it does. It causes them either
depression.
To abuse their kids.
It's depression. So, in other words...
Well, they call it depression. They call it psychosis. They don't know. These pharmaceutical people, Lars, they will pump people full of drugs that make their condition worse so that they'll turn to Big Pharma and get more drugs, and that's how they make money.
Well, except that, Mike, I've asked you this. If somebody in her situation goes to the doctor, says, Doctor, I'm feeling depressed. I can't sleep. I'm having, you know, even if she said I'm having crazy thoughts, should they say, well, okay, what should their advice be? Take some supplements to see if you're short of some minerals? That's what you want them to do?
Women should never go, women who are feeling bad like that should never go to a pharmacologist or
someone. Then where are they supposed to go?
Pharmaceuticals.
No, Mike, where are they supposed to go?
They should go to a good alternative health, like they could go to a nutritionist, they could go to a naturopath, somebody who's not going to pump them full of drugs.
But that's their choice.
And you can,
hold on, that's their choice.
Their choice.
Right.
I think we need reform along those lines.
She chose to go to conventional medicine, and then she chose to kill her children.
Well, the chose part of killing her children is
you don't think she chose to kill her children? You don't think she bears any responsibility?
I don't think she, with all those drugs and the psychosis or the depression, whatever you want to call it, I think she was not in her right mind.
Okay, that's interesting. Let me go to Joe. Hey, Joe, welcome to First Amendment Friday. What's on your mind?
good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. So I just a couple of quick things that I promise I'll leave you alone.
Sure.
One, she didn't get the treatment she needed, but she still murdered somebody. Right. So is it okay? No, it's not. She needs to go to prison forever.
Agree.
Number two, these are 12 people that weren't smart enough to get out of jury duty. How can you trust these people? I wouldn't.
Well,
and number three, I get it. No, we're supposed to do our civic duty. Like, I'll do my thing. But we're going to go up in front and help people. Like, well, let me help the judge decide. Well, no, these are the same judges who are hiding illegal aliens that have murdered, killed, maimed American citizens, and now we're supposed to be...
The only thing I'd ask you, Joe, is I have always had high praise for the jury system. Is there a better way of deciding guilt or innocence? Because there are different ways in different countries. Italy has a screwed up way, I think. But can you think of a better system than trusting 12 average citizens?
No, I can't. But that's the problem. It's not a system that is perfect. I think it's flawed beyond belief. But in the meantime, we have no other options. But also, you know, and there's people that were standing.
Unfortunately, Joe, I'm up against the break. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest.
The Lars Larson Show.
Portland's News.
Lars reads every email. No, really. Talk at LarsLarson.com. That's talk at LarsLarson.com. Now, back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. And I kind of anticipated that when there was a mistrial called in the case involving Lindsey Clancy, that there would be a lot of people who wanted to sound off about it. And I'm not surprised at all. Do I think that the woman should go to prison? I do. Do I think she is guilty of murder? I do, although the jury did not come to that conclusion. And it sounds like 11 of the jurors were ready to vote for acquittal. And thank God there was a 12th juror who said he was not willing to do that, even though the rest of the jury got very, very angry at that one juror. And the defense attorney even wanted the judge to remove that juror, which I don't think would have been justice at all. But to your calls. If you want to join the conversation, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. And send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. Amanda is a naysayer. And Amanda, we love naysayers, and we always put them first in line. So welcome to the program. And what do you and I disagree about that makes you a naysayer?
Oh, first of all, thanks for taking my call. Well, I have actually been through this before. I have three kids of my own. They're much older. They're in their 30s now. But my first two kids, I never had a problem with after I had them. No postpartum, no problems. Everything was fine. My third child, I came down with postpartum depression. So bad that I was so suicidal, I ran out into the highway right in front of where we live, in front of cars. So I was trying to kill myself, and they put me on some medication, and I can honestly say, and I want to cry about this, but I think I was in a position where I could have done what she did. I had to go to inpatient treatment three times until I was back on my feet. I know where she's coming from. I've felt that feeling. It hurts.
Amanda, can I just, I want to be clear about this. You tried to take your own life by your account, but you said you've been through what she's through. Did you ever have thoughts of killing your own children?
Yeah, I did. Yes.
You did?
I had horrible thoughts when I was in psychosis. I could not sleep, and every thought through my mind was, it would be better if me and the kids were gone. And it makes me want to cry because they're grown now. They're in their 30s, late 20s, and I made it through it. But I'm shaking right now because people don't understand. It's heart-wrenching.
Did you ever, I'm just curious. Did you ever share that with your kids? Say, hey, mom was really in trouble at one point, and it could have been bad for you?
It's been talked about in the family. My mom has talked about it. Yes, they're the ones that got me most of the help that I needed, my mom and my stepdad. So, yeah, it was a really, really hard time, and it took about a year and a half to 2 years before I was actually able to stop those thoughts racing through my mind and people could actually trust me to be alone.
Amanda,
by myself.
I appreciate you being so candid about this. Let me ask you about Lindsay Clancy, though. She'd apparently accessed the system. She tried. Right. She had problems with sleeping. She had problems with depression. She had problems with all these things. She was given treatment for all of them. Apparently, they ran through different cycles of treatment. So
Yes. She
accessed all that. Should they have taken her children away? And should they and did they take your children away?
They did not take my children away. I had a lot of people in my corner. No, they understood that there was something that was not me. And they
but were your kids in danger then because they were left with you?
Well, my mom had them a lot of the time. My husband was here. He's in their lives. But I was taken away from them quite a few times, inpatient treatments and things, because I should not. Everybody knew I should not be around with myself or them at that time. And I'm just glad I made it through it. And I'm sorry that she didn't.
The fact that these kids were left with Lindsay Clancy. And that she killed them. Nobody disputes. I mean, there are a few crazy theories to say the husband did it or whatever. But, it seems the evidence is pretty clear. She killed her children. Should she be excused for what is ordinarily a crime? If you kill somebody and you don't have any good reason like self-defense, then you have to have a consequence. Should there be a consequence for Lindsay Clancy?
In a normal situation, of course, yes. But because of her psychosis, and I've been there, I don't think she was in her right mind. And I don't think if she would have been getting the help she needed, that she would have ever went to that extreme. And no, she should not have been left.
Well, but here's the problem. Postpartum, 1 in 7, and there are 3.5 million births a year. And 1 in 7 or 500,000 of them have postpartum depression, some level of postpartum depression. Should we be taking the kids away from 500,000 moms a year?
I wouldn't say postpartum depression because that's just mostly depression because that was the first step. Psychosis is a whole nother animal.
Okay. That's 1 or 2 per thousand.
You. Yeah. 1 or 2 per thousand. So she's, her and I, we went through some things that most women will never have to go through. Postpartum is, it's a thing, but psychosis. Mm-mm.
Okay. Well, Amanda, I appreciate you being so honest about that. It was very interesting. Thank you. Let's go to Mary. Hey, Mary, what's on your mind on First Amendment Friday?
I am calling to say that I had postpartum as well with one of my children, and I would never consider killing my child, no matter what happened to me. If I was destitute and had no money and had to live in a car, I would do whatever I could to keep my children with me. And I also think that somebody who does that, I'm not judging her, but I am just saying that somebody who kills their children, murders their children, who will never be here anymore, their little children gone, how can she not be punished for that? Whatever her mental problems are, she can go to jail and have those problems worked on, I guess. But I don't think she should walk free because she had problems. We all have problems. And many of us have bad problems. We don't think of killing somebody. So I just think it's wrong. So I think she's guilty as hell. And I'm glad that, or I'm sorry, I didn't mean to say that. She's guilty as heck. And I'm glad that one juror.
I actually agree with you, Mary. I think she's guilty as hell. And, Mary, I have to agree with you 100%. Let's go to Kathy. Hey, Kathy, we're close to the break. What's your take on all this?
My take is nobody is talking about the fact that both the husband and the wife have separate lawsuits against the doctors for the medications that she was taking. And if she is found not guilty due to mental status, that supports her case so that she not only gets away with killing her children, she also makes millions or billions of dollars from it.
You might very well have that happen, Kathy. I appreciate the call. And by the way, Massachusetts, no Son of Sam law there. They could write books, too. You got the Lars Larson Show. Need to tell you falls here.
Missed the Lars Larson Show? Get the podcast right now at LarsLarson.com. Now, more with Lars Larson.
Hey, welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a First Amendment Friday. I wanted to spend a moment talking to Anupam Gildial, who is the chief operating officer of ReAlloys, which is an American rare earth company. Thank God we've got those. Working to build a domestic mine-to-magnet supply chain to supplant what we ordinarily buy from our friends in communist China. Anupam, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Lars.
So tell my audience, first of all, what ReAlloys is and why its existence is significant to the United States and our technological future.
Well, in the modern economy, like everything that we use on a daily basis and everything required for our survival as a nation has got some amount of rare earths in it. The microphone that you're talking on, the monitor in front of you, the headphones that you wear, the TV screens, the GPUs that go into AI, all the magnets that go into motors that power the F-35s, the Javelin missiles, aircraft carriers, submarines, everything has got rare earths in it. The problem is we don't make any. We are 100% reliant, not 100%, but 97% reliant on China for the heavy rare earths, which power some of the most important defense systems. This has got to change.
It does. Is it fair to say, though, and I hate to be critical of my own country, but we've been lazy about this. It's not that we don't have these rare earths. It's just been easier and cheaper to get them from China. Fair?
No, you're right. Like, America actually invented rare earths. And we thought that we optimized for the cheapest supply chain option, whereas China optimized for the control of the supply chain. And we taught them how to process rare earths and how to make rare earth metals and how to make magnets. So back in the 80s and 90s, America was doing all of it. And today, we do pretty much none of it. But that's changing. And we are now setting up large-scale manufacturing and processing operations for rare earth processing. And it's not the rare earths that are in rare supply. Like, there is a lot of rare earth supply available here in Canada and allied nations. What we primarily lack is the processing infrastructure. Like, what do you do with these mining ores after you get them out of the ground? Yeah. How do you convert them into rare earth oxides? How do you convert them into metals? And then how do you convert them into magnets? And that's what ReAlloys is doing, all of it.
I'm talking to Anupam Gildial, who is the chief operating officer for ReAlloys. So tell me this. I understand that the process of processing this stuff after you get it out of the ground is a very, very dirty process, and that perhaps China has accommodated this by just saying, we're just going to take a section of our country and basically mess it up and allow it to be contaminated for long term. So we would have to deal with that, but I would imagine we would have to deal with it a different way, and that is figure out a way to process this stuff in a way that doesn't just leave a toxic wasteland behind. Can we do that?
We 100% can do that, and we are doing it. So you can use a lot of modern technology. You can be environmentally responsible while producing these kind of metals and oxides and magnets that are required for running any kind of economy. To give you an example, we have brought several innovations to the table. So one is our solvent extraction process that we have partnered with SRC on. It has got 98% yield. So you're minimizing losses there by using AI, machine learning, and computer vision inside the processing infrastructure. Then we invented a new process where you do not use any hydrofluoric acid, which is the nastiest acid known to man, in the conversion process from oxides to metals. And the facility in Saskatchewan of our partner SRC is designed in a way that there is zero liquid waste discharge. Everything is converted into solids and disposed. So you just need the will to make it happen, and you can.
Okay, and I'm sure cost is going to be an issue, but what do you do with the old waste? Do you just glassify it and make it into glass blocks or what?
So the old processes have been existing because that has been the lay of the land back in the days. But now in the 21st century, if we are still reliant on technologies and processes from the 1970s and refuse to innovate, that's not an answer. Right. So we are taking a very first principles approach on what do these mining ores have? How do you separate them? How do you convert them into usable products? What is the best and the most efficient way to do it? What modern technologies can be used today to make it more sustainable and greener?
I'm talking to Anupan Gildyal, who is the Chief Operating Officer at ReAlloys. You know, one of the questions that always comes up is they'll say, well, these rare earths are expensive and that it's cheaper if we buy it from China. Do you know what I've never heard anybody do? I'd love to know. You gave a great set of examples, the headphones I'm wearing, the computer in front of me, the smartphone that I use and all that. You know, I'd like to know, if you took a typical smartphone, how many dollars worth of rare earths are in it? And how much would it cost to buy those same rare earths if we did them the way you just described, which is do them in America, do them in a way that's clean, and do them in a way that leaves behind very little waste? And how big a difference is there? Is it $20? Is it $50? Is it $100 more expensive to do it the right way and produce our own rare earths rather than buy them from the communist Chinese?
It will barely make a difference that consumers would notice.
Really?
I'll give you an example.
Wow.
Yeah, the F-150, right? Like F-35. It's
yeah.
$150 million. It has got rare earth magnets worth a few thousand dollars in them. Would that make a difference in terms of the price of the F-35?
No.
The answer is no. But if we don't have access to these rare earths, we cannot make a single F-35.
So how quickly can we stand up this technology at an industrial scale that will supply what America's economy needs? Is it going to take decades?
So the good thing is we've already started. There are a bunch of companies like us who are participating in this process. We are a fully integrated mine-to-magnet approach, which very few companies are doing. And we are focused on heavy rare earths, which is the biggest missing link. So there are two kinds of rare earths, lights and heavies. Heavy rare earths are required for any kind of critical systems, like be it data centers or missiles or F-35s or things like that, which are very important. So the process is already underway. I still think it will take at least 7 to 10 years for us to be fully independent. And I would assume that in the next 15 years or so, we could be net exporters, where we are producing enough for ourselves and also supplying to our allied nations.
Anupam, that's fantastic. 7 to 10. I mean, you kind of could have knocked me over with a feather. I think that's a fantastic. I mean, it'd be nice if you could do it next week, but 7 to 10 years sounds perfectly acceptable. We'll look forward to talking to you the next time. Sir, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
It is a pleasure. That is Anupam Gildyal, who is the Chief Operating Officer at ReAlloys, an American rare earth company. Let's put the Chinese out of the rare earths business and they can stop contaminating their country.
The Lars Larson Show.
FM News 101.